Welcome to Charter School Conversations, a weekly podcast for the Utah charter school community. I'm your host, Gina James, with the Utah Association of Public Charter Schools. We'll do a little board training, have conversations with charter school leaders, and touch on issues that affect us all. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. I'm here at City Academy with Sonia Woodbury, the executive director. I'm so grateful that I'm here and able to have a conversation with you. Why don't you give us a little rundown of what City Academy is about and what your charter focus is, kind of your mission and vision for the school. And then I'd love to get into some history with you too, because sure. City Academy is one of the first charter schools. So there's okay. A lot there, a loaded question.
Sure. Vision of the school originally, and as you said, it was a long time ago now. The people who started this school were faculty members of different kinds at the University of Utah, but we had all been classroom teachers. And the idea in our heads was that student engagement in high school, and especially middle school, was not what it could be or needed to be. We'd experienced so many classrooms through our work. We were in the teacher education program, so we'd been out in a lot of schools and observing in classrooms and working with new student teachers and all of that. And what you see so much is students just kind of sitting back in their chair, waiting to be told what to do and what do I need to do to get an A or a B or whatever. And so we thought with charter school legislation and the opportunity to be innovative, it seemed like the right time to say, what would it take to create a high school that students want to go to, like want to engage with learning? What would that be? And that was the vision we held as we tried to, you know, think about what this school should be. How would we, why would we need another charter school? We have high schools for everybody. So why would we need one to tackle some kind of issue that, you know, hopefully we could improve something? So that was the goal. And the focus really was on both academics and citizenship as we saw it, being a member of a school community and also being a member of a larger community and really engaging students in that work as a part of their learning and while they were learning. So that was the vision that started this school.
So was that part of the way that you were going to engage students mm-hmm. is show them the effect that they have within their community mm-hmm. and then kind of grow and develop that. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like at City Academy?
Well, and so that there's different aspects of that, of course. Using your voice and using it respectfully and appropriately and civilly and all those things is something that you don't just know how to do. And so it's something we practice all the time in all of our classes. When the school was first starting, the first few years, we joined the First Amendment School Project, which was a national project, and there were 11 schools across the country, but three in Utah. Utah was kind of a hotbed for this kind of work nationally in that program. So we were part of that program and trying to help students understand what their rights were, and also it was stemmed from the 3 R's project, rights, respect, and responsibility. So that's kind of what started our work, but it's evolved into a place where we've created structurally a lot of opportunity for students to practice being citizens and practice being informed citizens and practice using their voice, not just in classrooms, but through other programs throughout the school. All of our students serve on a school-wide committee of some kind that takes care of an aspect of our school. Even things like there's an events committee that plans, well, right now they just did prom, but, you know, events for our school and things like dances. But also there's a technology committee and a yearbook committee, and they're just taking care of different pieces of our school for each other. And so while one group plans dances, the other one makes the yearbook, and another one takes care of building and grounds and makes sure the gardens look good and all that kind of stuff. But it gives students 7th through 12th grade a place to grow in that sense. First, they just are part of a committee, and then they learn to take leadership roles and create their own projects and communicate about their projects and get solicit help for their projects and things like that. And those are all lifetime skills that they're learning. They're citizenship and engagement type skills that you need for your life, you know, to help make things happen in your community. So I think structurally we tried to make sure there was lots of opportunity in the school to participate in that way. It also affected the way we approach teaching and learning. 25 years ago when we were starting this program, there was a lot of research about this kind of thing. And it's evolved over time that it's pretty true that when students are actually this inquiry-based approach where they're actually learning to ask questions and delve into things, investigate things, is a better way to learn. Because it's hard to learn when your mind isn't curious about something. Everyone knows how hard it is to try and sit and memorize something.
But it sounds like a great way to really engage those students in they have to figure it out.
Yes. And there's two things to that that are really important. One is what you just said. The figuring it out part is what drives them through the learning because they really want to figure it out. So they get, you know, I got to know how to do this or what this is about or whatever. So coming up with those good questions that can drive that kind of learning is really important. And so our work on inquiry-based learning here is something that some of our new teachers aren't as familiar with. So they have to develop as they work with us. And some of the programs that we use already come that way, but across the curriculum. So in history, we're asking questions like, how civilized were the Romans, rather than today we're studying Roman civilization, right? And just asking the question makes your mind start to wonder about those things. The other thing that's really important about that as well is that in public school, one of the things is that we're heterogeneous here. There's lots of kinds of learners and people and all of that. And if we start segregating, that really isn't the answer to how to become a good community.
Right. So it goes right along with your community learning.
Right. So if we want to keep a heterogeneous classroom moving forward, every student can explore the same question. They're just going to do it at their own level. So a student sitting in that 10th grade World Civ class where we ask how civilized were the Romans, if they've been watching the History Channel since they were 3 years old, they're going to know a whole lot more than students who never thought about ancient civilization. That's okay, because we're all going to work toward, we have state standards, we're all going to work towards some information about government and economy and all those kinds of things that we need to know about Roman civilization, but kids will develop their own levels of competency with that. And that's all good. We can all sit in the same classroom and have those discussions and all learn. So it's done two things. It's helped us build the kind of community we want students to learn in, and it's helped engage kids' minds, high school students' minds, I want to say, who are so willing to sit back too often and
I dare you to teach me, right?
Kind of.
How do you support your teachers to do that?
There's two things. One is that came to us through this program, through developing the school. We had to search for another advanced placement program because at the time, I think AP and IB have gotten better about this, but at the time, 15 years ago or so, when we were choosing advanced placement programs, it was mostly memorization and it was multiple choice tests. And that didn't match with this kind of investigative learning that kids had been doing up till they took the advanced class. So we now use a curriculum, Cambridge International Exams, that is more oriented towards this investigative learning and has a pre-advanced level program. So in 9th and 10th grade, even, they're starting this program. So we have the advantage of using curriculum like that that helps us with those questions. It's also true that both math and science at our state level have oriented our program's standards more towards that kind of approach. And so there are now more and more curriculum materials for that. In English language arts, it's harder. Again, we have the Cambridge program for the advanced level courses, but coming up with those good questions so we can start our 7th and 8th graders even in approaching it that way is just work we do over time and develop. And many times it's taking a standard like Roman civilization and turning it into a question that really starts the process. And then we refine that question.
But starting the kids in 7th grade, doing that really kind of shifts their mindset so that they're familiar with that when they get 9th, 10th, you know, 11th, 12th. And I just love that approach because it really does kind of widen their world and let them know you can figure anything out.
Yes, you can. Yes, and you can make a difference even if you want to in trying to come up with solutions and sharing your ideas. I mean, we work on all those things. This week, our seventh graders, you know, all this road construction has started on Second South. Mm-hmm. This is a big city project. The seventh graders in Utah Studies went out there to start investigating city development and road design and who funds this and is it going to be actually better when it's done? And why do we need these kind of things, you know, different designs for our roads? And they're learning a lot. And they're right now they're generating their questions. And then they're going to study some more about urban planning and all the things that they're supposed to learn in Utah Studies. But it's a different approach that I think drives their learning. And as you said, if they start doing that in seventh grade, then they hold on to that as they go through.
Well, and think about what they can do when they're graduating.
That's what I hope.
I mean, starting off seventh grader, you know, we're preparing the urban planners of the future, mm-hmm. and the road construction, and yeah. it's so applicable. But they're literally watching it yeah. happen out their window right. of their school. And so right. just to answer that question and connect them with the community really mm-hmm. does drive mm-hmm. home. So how many students do you have at the school?
Right now, it's about 125. We're really low coming out of COVID. And we're growing. And right now, there's a lot of enrollment coming in. So I'm excited about next fall and welcoming some new students. But actually growing back, our school was meant to be more like 250 to 300 students. And that's where we were a few years ago. So we have to find our way back. But the idea always was to have a smaller school so that it was a personalized learning environment and a learning community, and that people did know each other. I think the advantage of knowing everyone over not knowing everyone is really important. Again, building community and so you feel comfortable getting involved.
That's a huge point because I think in other schools when there's, you know, a student government mm-hmm. that a few select students can see right. those decisions being made at the school level and, right. you know, certain things. But to have every student mm-hmm. be part of a committee and be fully mm-hmm. involved and mm-hmm. engaged in their school, I mean yeah. – that also does a lot to just the culture of the school. So how would you describe a City Academy student?
Where my mind goes is how do they describe themselves? I think they come here for a lot of different reasons, but City Academy students feel comfortable being themselves. I think that's what they're learning to be, is who they are. And for teenagers, that's not always apparent. And it's not supposed to be, right? So, but they have enough opportunity and experience to try using their voice and try disagreeing with people and try on different roles and things they take in the school and really kind of uncover who they want to be. And I think that's the thing I see most in our graduates is students who've learned. You have to have the knowledge and then how to use that knowledge and how to use that in an intentional way. Staying true to what they believe and what they value. And, you know, we're not teaching them to value any certain way of looking at things, but certainly to be able to support their opinions and their what they think is knowledge and their views with examples and evidence. And right. that's what they've learned to do.
Yeah, which is the role of education, right?
I hope so.
You're like to teach them to
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
So I'd love to talk about the beginnings and your involvement sure. in the beginnings with City Academy. So as one of the first charter schools in this brand new venture, how do you even know how to start a charter school? What was that like?
You know, interestingly, I don't think any of us thought of this as a daunting task because we used to meet. In the beginning, there were eight of us, and we'd meet at the library or someplace and talk about starting our schools. And we were all just starting our schools. There was not all this tension or like concern. We were just so excited in starting our schools. And there were a little bit of hitches, and some people couldn't find a location fast enough and had to do something in the meantime to get started and a few things like that. But that wasn't the point. The point was the school they wanted, the education they wanted to start. And it was kind of just exciting. It was kind of a heady time. You know, we're running a school.
Doing what we want, teaching how we want.
Sometimes you wake up in the morning, pinch it. No, really, I'm getting public money to run this school. Parents are bringing me their students. You know, it's like, it was great. I think over time, the reality of the detail of it, it's always what happens when something doesn't go well. So then you have to figure that out. And then the states really was still trying to figure out what to do with charter schools because in effect, they had created 8 new districts. And so all of a sudden they had 8 new districts and they weren't sure how we fit in the big scheme of things. But honestly, all the people that we had to interface with at the state office whenever we had an issue, the people we were given to talk with were so helpful, and we were just figuring it out together. And the same with this team of 8 of us. And then 3 years later, some new schools joined, and it was kind of a round table always, you know, people trying to figure it out together and bringing things up and helping each other. And for the most part, we were all spread out, so we didn't feel in competition with anybody else. There wasn't another charter school near us, so it wasn't even about any of that.
Right, so it was very collaborative. Everybody's, hey, I figured this out, and try this. And
yeah.
And especially adding on, now that you have to figure out your building, and it was a little bit of everything.
And I had the advantage, one of the people on my board was a commercial real estate person, and so I had the advantage of someone in my ear telling me, you don't have to own your building. You can lease your building and put your money and everything in other ways. And so I started out that way, but many schools had to start by trying to buy a space. And later over the years, legislation got passed to help them with that. But in the beginning, we just had to figure out what money we had and how we could have a place to be. You just had to figure it out.
Charter schools, the early years, just figure it out.
Just figure it out. I think that's it.
So do you think schools have figured it out? I mean, looking back kind of 20, 25 years later, what do you think about all the charter schools that we have?
I think charter schools have a lot to offer in terms of figuring out facilities, because some charter schools have built from scratch and said, this is the school we want. But most have either leased like I have or taken over an old grocery store or warehouse building and fixed it up. And I think what we've learned is that it's not all about these fancy facilities with the atrium in the middle and all that that seem to keep being built. if our budget has to, we don't have property tax money. Like, I can't remember when the legislation passed that gave us the extra funding for facilities, but it wasn't that long ago. Like, in the beginning, it all came out of the same pot of money. And so back to figuring it out, we really had to say, how much should we be paying out of the whole 100%? What percentage should go to facilities versus teachers and, you know, things like that? So then you look at your facilities differently and you utilize them well. And we've grown because we've kind of collaborated with other organizations that use this facility when we weren't using it. And so now we've been able to build this partnership with Gifted Music School, where most of their work is after school lessons and weekends. And, you know, during the day they would be empty and during the evening we would normally be empty, so we can use this space together. I think those are the kind of things charter schools have helped figured out, especially with facilities. I think it's something communities should consider. If we do need a new high school, like sometimes you do, I mean, things happen. So could it more be a community center rather than a high school or a middle school or whatever? You know, there's lots of things that would be happening in that building while the students aren't there. Because if you think about it, school is, by definition, 180 days a year, which is half of the possible days in a year. And then of those 180 days, students are in school 6 or 7 hours, which is half of the hours you could use a building. And so a quarter of the time you're using it for holding classes. So what else could you be using your facility for? I think charter schools have made a difference in how we can see envisioning how schools could exist in places where that's not the only thing going on. I'm not sure it's being picked up as an ideal as much as it should be, but I think it's being demonstrated so that we can see that. I think that's a good thing charter schools have done.
Well, and that speaks to your building a school that is a community school. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really that thinking, I mean, in action, right, is where you're coming from, that just setting it up to be part of the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. What do you see as far as education as a whole in Utah over the last couple of decades that you've been in education plus, right? Yeah. What do you see as some of the great things that have come out and maybe some of the things that we still need to work on?
Well, I've been in education over 40 years now from when I first started teaching, but it feels like, you know, when we opened this charter school, there was no state assessment. All of that began the second or third year we were open. And that kind of accountability through certain kinds of kind of low-level testing, in a sense, I think has not helped move us forward in the way we want to. I completely understand accountability and trying to not make sure we're not leaving students behind. The No Child Left Behind idea is really important, but how we've tried to enact that, I think, has held us back. I don't think we've tried to learn enough from what charter schools have been trying. So there's charter schools out there taking different approaches to education, and I don't know of much research or data that shows what we think we've learned from that or how we'd like to grow that idea or not. We're still playing around with ideas, but, you know, 20-something years into this, we have some ideas about what's going to work. I think too much has changed. Honestly, so much has changed since we opened, since charter school started in the state of Utah, that it's hard to think about if has it improved or not, or what's made a difference. It's hard.
Because there's so much that's different. I mean, even really think about the technological advances mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. last 20 years. Right. I just think it's just at breakneck speed.
It is.
And how do we incorporate that and still give our kids a quality education and be able to hit that depth
right.
within technology?
Using. Yes. And related to technology are the jobs available. And so it's always been true. I've always said to our students that, you know, I can't hope to prepare you for a job you're going to get in 5 years when you graduate from college, because some of those don't exist now. But it's so much more true now than it's ever been. And so what is the value of schooling? How do we do things in high schools and middle schools that really do prepare students to be ready to get jobs and start careers and get next education? That's changing so quickly. Community values are changing quickly. I think when the pandemic happened, that really, again, changed values. In 2008, when we had that economic downturn, I saw a real shift in what happened at our school with, you know, students before that time, so many more of them were thinking of going to college, even out of state to college. Everybody pulled back. And, you know, I had a student who got a scholarship to a school. She played lacrosse, and she got a scholarship to a school on the East Coast. And we were so excited for her because she got this scholarship money to go. You know, we thought, oh, good, she's going to be able to do this. And her mom was just in tears because she said, I don't have money for a plane ticket. I'll never see her. Okay, so, you know, all these things that affect everything but education.
Right.
But then it affects your education because what are you going to do next, you know? And so I think so much, it's hard. I guess I don't have any perspective yet. It feels so different from when we opened the school. The things we thought were going to be important are clouded now by all this state testing and accountability for things that, you know, benchmarking accountability rather than sort of general outcome. In the end, we want to be here, and everybody's got their pace and their way of getting there, but here's where we're going. That's not what we're measuring. We're measuring every little benchmark. And it's hard to know how to hit some of those, and every student's different. I really value this work on personalized education. I'm part of the cohort working on that. And we've been working on that always. But it has to be valued.
That's a tricky balance because students do work at so many different mm-hmm. levels and at so many different paces. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, they need to be at a certain outcome, mm-hmm. but to put the timing on that can be difficult to measure.
And I think often over the last while, social issues have grown, things like suicide and things like that. These issues have become so much more prominent, even just kids being anxious about things. Even before COVID, there was just, that was building this anxiety issue, or that's what I saw. We didn't see so much of that until maybe 10 years ago. It's hard to put a right. flag on it, but it's certainly way over the top now. And so how much that gets in the way of what you value about an education and what's important and how to approach that. And over these 20 years, schools have become, we have to be worried about lunch and immunizations and all these things. And we're all accountable for so many things besides just their education. And I don't know, it's hard. It's hard to wrap your mind around, have things improved, you know, or what are we doing?
Right.
I don't know for sure.
It's because there's so much more. Mm-hmm. You know, the measures are different. Maybe, uh-huh. So maybe that's an unfair question. Well, it is an unfair question because 20 years ago, there weren't all those other issues that the schools are now responsible for.
Right. You know, as I mentioned, there wasn't even state testing. Of course we knew what the state, there was a core curriculum and we all knew what we were teaching and what our goals were and all of that. But I don't know, it just feels different now and the emphasis has shifted. I think it isn't helping us per se, but I don't know. It's hard to tell right now.
What can we do? What is unique about City Academy that is supporting the students and helping in academics and moving your students forward?
I hope we're helping our students value education because as they learn more, it builds the way they can have evidence to support their opinions. And so that's what they all want to have is opinions, right?
Yes, I was going to say, well, but there's no shortage of opinions with high schoolers. Yes. I'm very familiar with several of them in my own house.
Yeah. So building on that, if we're in a school environment all the time where we're asking them to support, great, that's a good opinion. Why do you think that? How do you want to convince somebody else that this is worth considering? Building that knowledge base and evidence is something that I think they're more interested in because it flows that way. Mm-hmm. And then they get to use their voice and have discussions and share ideas and all those kinds of things. I think that's one approach. I think also, and this has been really hard, but just trying to build a school culture where it's okay to be smart.
Yeah.
And it's okay to want to learn things and to value education, that education is the ticket to more things. Building that kind of culture, I think, is what we're trying to do. And it's hard.
Well, and I can see within that culture, too, that can add confidence to students. That can give them that way to fight some of that mm-hmm. social anxiety mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and to find out who they are and be comfortable with themselves, which I definitely think that's something that has been going on for the last several years is just kids are just even more unsettled,
yes.
You know, and then throw a pandemic on top of it. So
right. Because it was that way before the pandemic.
And, right. Yeah. Right.
And so that there's a lot of work now on resiliency. There's a lot of materials and guest speakers and people you can have to work with you on resiliency. And we use that word a lot here too. But the idea is that growth mindset that I don't know how to do that yet.
Yes.
And I will learn.
Well, and too, as teachers or collaborators with the students, you know, and being good right. examples, I've heard you talk about your teachers before,
right.
Just how phenomenal they are at connecting with mm-hmm. the students mm-hmm. and then helping them mm-hmm. grow that resiliency. I would like to know, how do you maintain that resiliency through your 40 plus years? What are some things that you do to keep going? It's not easy.
You're right. I think there's probably two things. One is just the original goal we had still seems important to me, to create middle and high school that's valuable to students, you know, that they want to come here and engage and do the things we're doing. They want to learn. I think creating that environment in a school is still really important to me. I'm a teacher at heart. So that's really important. I think another thing that keeps me going are just those individual anecdotal stories, different kids doing things and accomplishing things. And now what's really cool is, for the first time, I have some alumni bringing their seventh grader to me.
Oh, wow.
So that's, you know, and they come back and they're here. They say to their student, you know, this was a really good place. We want you to have this experience. And I'm thinking, okay.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's why I do this.
That's so rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what did you teach? How did you begin in education?
As a new teacher, I began in math and dance. I had a double major when I was in college, and I got both things on my teaching certificate. So, and I was fortunate. I was so fortunate to find a job straight out of college where I could teach math and dance.
That is like the far ends of the spectrum.
I know. Well, and yet it isn't. There's in the research, there's a lot of literature
sure.
about the kind of mindset it takes to do. Well, I was in ballet first. But anyway, there's a lot of stuff that goes together there. But for me, it was so important because the dance just gave me this other kind of creative outlet, which I hadn't found through math at that time, because this was a long time ago. And math education and math in the schools and learning math was not creative enough at that time. Now it's such a different approach. I mean, all the critical and creative thinking you do in math is part of the program, but it wasn't then. And sure. So for me, doing both was really important. And then I quickly learned when I started teaching, it was two different ways of knowing my students. Because I was in this math classroom where I had to, you know, get through the math curriculum, and we were working hard on problems and getting the right answer and all that stuff.
A lot of pencil to paper, just get it done.
And then at lunch, I get to go down and change my clothes and warm up, and I get to dance all afternoon with some of the same students. But I knew them so differently in a dance class, and I started to realize, gosh, I love both. You know, I couldn't give up one or the other, and I'm so grateful I was able in the beginning to have all that experience and outlet for my what I like to do and share that with students. And I think it really started me off on a good path in education, honestly.
Well, you loved it right from the beginning. You had that variety to prevent the burnout, which sometimes is an issue.
Yeah, I think that really helped. I do.
That's amazing. As you follow the trajectory of your career and think about that, what was it that pushed you into administration that influenced that?
I left teaching for a little while I was having my children and young children. And during that time, I went back to do my graduate work. And I kind of learned through that graduate work that I couldn't really go back to the math classroom the way I left it. I mean, I loved teaching dance. I have always done that, and I've always danced. But the math classroom was not okay to me. And so I really focused my graduate studies on math education. And again, serendipitously, that was exactly the time when our country was focusing on math education, and NCTM just came out with all their new math standards. It was in the 90s. And I realized, oh, now I see a pathway forward. So then I was able to come back into really how to make changes in schools. And that's what led me into administration, was educational reform. Like, how do we actually make a change? Not just change to make it different, but change to make it better.
Make it better.
and so that's what led me a little bit into administration, but still not administration. It was more like just the opportunity to start a charter school became so inviting because I could bring all of that to bear here and didn't just start that way. We had an advantage too, honestly, I have to say. If I was an administrator in a junior high somewhere at that time or high school, it would have been much harder to start implementing all those approaches because you're in such a big systematic setting that it takes a long time to make change like that.
And the layers that you have to go through to get approvals.
Yes.
And
So we had the advantage of just starting that way. And that's what I couldn't pass up. I never really wanted to be an administrator, but this opportunity was something I really have enjoyed.
Well, it sounds like you saw the opportunity to make a positive change.
Yes.
Which you've continued to do over the years.
So. Yeah, I hope so.
Is there a student experience or story that has really stood out to you that lets you know that on those hard days that you go back to and go, no, that I made a difference with that person?
One of them for sure is what just happened with that couple that brought their seventh grader in that we had taught previously. That's the first time for us. You know, every school will start to have more, I hope. But, this is a silly story, but it kind of exemplifies. One year at graduation, I was talking to some of the seniors. We just had the ceremony, and everybody was standing around talking. And I was talking to one of our seniors, and she said to me, you know, I've been talking to a lot of my friends that just graduated from other schools, and she said, listening to their experience, and they'd never want to go back to high school and all this kind of stuff. And she says, I'm just so glad that my high school experience didn't suck. And I thought,
that's high praise.
Yeah,
I mean, that's huge. Anyone that knows teenagers, that's actually remarkable.
It felt good. And I thought, I hope that's how they all feel. It's like, this was worth it at some level. I'm not going to look back and wish I'd never had to do that. And
oh, I love that.
So I think that sticks in my mind.
Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful story to really show the kind of community that you've built here, the vision that drives you forward, the change for better mm-hmm. to build that community. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. And we encourage anybody who wants to come out and see what they've got going at City Academy to come take a visit. Give Dr. Woodbury, she didn't talk about that last degree that she has. Give Dr. Woodbury a call. She's got a depth of experience that has really helped the charter world. So we thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening in today. The Utah Association of Public Charter Schools is a nonprofit organization that provides training, advocacy, and technical support to promote excellence in Utah's public charter schools. Learn more about us on our website at utahcharters.org.